please tell me, Stephen, that you looked up what they actually say in Morse code?
I did.
Yes! Oh, you come through. So, yes. Thank you.
Well, that's premature celebration because according to Reddit, it's mostly gibberish.
Damn. Can we say damn? Damn sure. It. Darn it. That
dang it.
Stinks. Dang it. Da-dang it.
This seems like a detail The Office would have gotten right.
I know. They make websites for totally like just little goofs and little things in the show. They make full-blown websites. They set up 1-800 call numbers for stuff that legitimately go to voicemail boxes, and they couldn't give us a real Morse code message?
Yeah. It seems like it's mostly gibberish. So,
do you think it's gibberish because of the camera cuts, or it feels legit gibberish?
I don't know. I feel like if it was real, they would not cut so much, because then it would be like an Easter egg, like see what Pam or Jim were saying. And so I think maybe the cuts are there to help cover the fact that it's not real. That's my theory, and I am disappointed gravely in the show.
I am too. I'm ready to flip some tables.
I know.
It would have been a perfect trivia question. Oh, so good.
I know. That'd be a great trivia thing. What did Jim say in Morse code? And, you know, people listening to this show would know.
Yeah, they would know.
Oh, I have a real life Office trivia story for you, you know, okay, before we actually start the podcast.
Okay, so I'll save like to discuss what episode we're talking about.
Yeah,
so,
people know okay. What we're doing. It's fine.
Okay.
It was right there in the episode description in your podcast player.
That's true. Read.
So I was with some friends last night outside, socially distanced, COVID safe. You know, and I mentioned an upcoming vacation to take some time off, and I said, "Oh, I'm going to leave in X number of days." And another guy in the group was like, "Oh, dude, no, that's like 2 days away. You know, today's Tuesday, not Monday." And I was like, "Wait, no, it's definitely Monday. You're off a day." And someone else was like, "Oh man, we really could have pranked you." And I was like, yeah, like the time Michael ate a whole chicken pot pie and they skipped the time ahead, and everybody laughed and thought I was clever.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
You should have brought up when they pranked Dwight because he had the different day.
Oh, no. I totally forgot about it. I'm a failure.
You're off the podcast. I'm going to get somebody else.
It's harsh.
See, you were all excited, and I burst that bubble. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, you just really just right in the gut. Okay, so what are we talking about today?
We're talking about season 6, episode 24, The Cover-Up, which originally aired on May 6, 2010. This is the directorial debut of our one and only Rainn Wilson, a.k.a. Dwight.
All right.
This season, as we've talked about before, has seen the directorial debut of John Krasinski. Krasinski? I never know how to say his last name. Say it for me, Stephen.
Krasinski?
Sounds good. All right. Sorry, John. Of Jim's directorial debut. And also Mindy Kaling was, we've discussed that she has directed a number of episodes and written a few episodes, but it was in this season that she was directing for the first time. So three of the cast members in season 6 had their directorial debut, which is pretty cool.
I mean, I think at this point, you know, the show is more mature. They know what it is. These people have had a lot of experience on it. So I really like that this show benefits from that. I mean, you read about The Office or hear people talk about it who were involved. It's a very collaborative effort, where a lot of shows, it's very top down. And so, yeah, I like that, you know, the actors got to get behind the camera and even write episodes. And I think it makes the show better, because who knows these characters better than the people who play them week after week?
Yeah, I can't really speak for any other shows because I've never really done a deep dive like this for anything else. I am a repeat watcher of multiple TV series, but obviously The Office is my favorite. So I've never, you know, kind of read the cliff notes of other episodes from other shows. So I'm not quite sure how this works, if this is a unique thing, if it like started more with The Office. I don't know. But either way, I love it. I love finding out all these little tidbits. So should we talk about our cold open?
Yes. Yeah, we should.
Which has no meaning. So maybe we shouldn't. Let's just throw it away. It's legitimately a cold open. It is cold. It has nothing to do with the episode, it seems like. And Jim and Pam are freaking Dwight out by kind of clicking pens and keyboard clicks. And Dwight was able to interpret some messages in Morse code. And he accuses them of trying to talk about him behind his back.
Stop it.
Stop what?
You're talking about me in Morse code. You know what? Joke's on you, because I know Morse code. Ha!
Yeah, that's what we're doing. In our very limited free time, and with our very limited budget, we went and got a nanny, and then we went out and took a class on a very outmoded and very unnecessary form of communication just so we could talk about you in front of you.
Turns out, that's exactly what they've done.
Yep, that's exactly what we did.
Which is great. Dwight, of course, can understand Morse code, which I think their whole prank depended on. And so he tries to talk back to Jim and Pam. And then at some point, someone Morse codes the word detonator. And Dwight goes to complain to Michael, who can't be bothered by this. He just doesn't handle it at all, which is fantastic. It's like, oh, come on, Dwight. This is another one of your things.
I think my favorite part of this entire cold open is the long extended silence during the Morse code blinking scene between Pam and Dwight. I think that is brilliant. I find it really fascinating when a show or a movie chooses extremely long silences. And you don't really get that in a sitcom that's only on for like 20 minutes every week, right? So they chose to use this valuable time in this silent blinking scene that is basically saying nothing. And I just think that it's so, so well done. And it's so fun to see Pam and Dwight face off like that.
Fantastic. It really, really is. But yeah, it's gibberish, so we must move on.
So, Steven, how's it going with Donna?
It is what the kids call hot and heavy.
Things with Donna are so, they're going great.
There's a lot of PDA. Hank enjoys it. Angela
does
not.
He enjoy it? Does Hank enjoy it?
He's eating a bowl of oatmeal, watching them make out at his desk. I think he's enjoying it.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
Which is upsetting. Just for the record, not cool, Hank. But yeah, Michael's very pleased with how it's going, and so much so that he's getting romantic weekend ideas from his staff, which is completely appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, well, this is his family and his friends. Where else would he ask for advice? I don't think he has, like, you know, a bunch of friends that he can, like, call up and hang on the weekends and discuss these kind of things. And I really like how the feedback from the staff, it is more, like, friendly chit-chat.
And the reason you are here is that I need ideas for things that Donna and I can do on the weekend. So just shout it out.
I have an idea for your weekend.
Okay.
Let me go back to my desk right now.
Hey, you get out of here, big dog. No. You guys sit down. I need ideas.
Stanley got to go.
Yeah, well, Stanley doesn't help with anything. Come on. Shout him out.
Walk around apple orchards.
Oh.
Super romantic.
That's fun. Eel fishing. All right.
Curl up with your favorite DVD.
You and Donna should hit the Poconos. They have heart-shaped jacuzzis. Room enough for free.
We actually went to the Poconos last Tuesday.
We've discussed, you know, Michael changing. We've discussed the relationships between everybody changing. And this conference room feel, it doesn't feel like everyone is as annoyed as they had been in the past with Michael pulling them in for personal things. This time they're kind of like, yeah, let's discuss some ideas. And they start, you know, chatting about Donna and their relationship and how things are going.
Yeah. Well, except for Stanley, he doesn't want to have to do anything. And
well, Stanley's already balancing multiple relationships. So
yeah,
I think
he's busy. He has his hands full.
That's right. He doesn't need to talk about anything more like with balancing relationships. He's out. But Kelly and Ryan, they kind of, they're starting to yuck on Michael's yum here.
Is that a phrase that people use?
Yeah, don't you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it comes out that they have been going, or that at least once they went basically out of town for dinner, and that sort of raises flags for Ryan and Kelly, both of whom are well acquainted with cheating seems like. Ryan has a bunch of questions that if the answers are yes to, then someone's cheating, and he just rattles them off one after another.
Does she keep her phone locked around you, Michael? Does she watch how much she drinks around you, Michael? Does she leave the room when she takes phone calls? Does she keep perfume in her purse? Does she shower before sex? Does she shower after sex? Does she... Yeah, she does all that. Sorry, dude.
Let your imagination run amok.
And so, yeah, they are kind of putting this idea into Michael's head that she could be cheating. And Pam, just like in the previous episode where Pam sort of plays the other side of the argument, Pam's like, no, you don't have to worry about that. You know, don't let your imagination run wild. But, you know, now that this is in Michael's head, he just is sort of going to be turning it over and obsessing about it.
Of course, in typical Michael fashion. And in typical Michael fashion, he turns to the person who he probably should not be turning to, and that's Dwight. He decides to hire Dwight to investigate Donna and find out what she's up to.
Well, he goes to Dwight for a name of someone who can investigate, and then Dwight gives him his own card, which is a very Dwight thing to do. By the way, we shouldn't skip over the fact that they've been on 9 dates and she won't say I love you, something that he said on the second date.
Yeah, that still feels a little soon.
It's a little fast. So Dwight is on the case now.
I need the name of a good private investigator.
I think I've got one for you.
This is you. How much you charge?
$100 a day plus expenses.
I'll give you 50. Money's no object.
Done. I'm just going to warn you, and I say this to all my clients, you might not like what I find.
Okay.
And you might not like how I find it.
And he finds Donna, I guess, going into her gym, right? So he's there. I think he's sitting on the hood of his car, which I'm sure he thinks is very cool.
I mean, he has one knee up. He's like, you know, in that seductive pose on the hood of his car. I think that's what he was going for.
There's a little line here that this is the first time I've caught it watching this episode, where Donna's like, oh, hey, you work for Michael. And his response is, I work with Michael.
Hey, stranger.
Oh, hi. You work for Michael.
I work with Michael.
Right.
Dwight Schrute.
Donna, hi.
I did not hear that. That's so good.
Very fast. Very good.
That's what she said.
So Dwight's plan is to seduce her and then call Michael and say, yes, she is cheating on you. Which is quite the plan.
I am so upset by Dwight's seduction techniques. I mean, I know that that's the feeling that the writers and probably the director wanted to give. Oh wait, the director's Dwight.
Yeah.
So, wow. Okay, thinking about Rainn Wilson directing this, and he is at the gym in his sweaty white undershirt and still his like business pants on with the cell phone clipped to the outside, which yep. He still hasn't changed despite Kelly's fashion advice. And yeah, he is, he's causing quite a problem for Donna in the gym. He is very aggressive. Donna's very forgiving. She lets it go for pretty long before getting super fed up by it.
Yeah. It really kind of comes to a head when he suggests, you know, that why he's there is they will see each other naked.
I'm sorry. Okay. Listen. We both know why I'm here. To see you naked while I'm naked.
She tells him to stay away or she'll call gym security, which apparently we don't see this, but she does because I guess he just can't let it go. But yeah, very creepy, very upsetting, not cool in any way. No one should ever act like this.
Also, can we discuss for 2 seconds that weird head weight that Dwight puts on? Have you ever seen that at a gym? What is that?
I don't know what that was.
What sport is that for? Or like what kind of weightlifting apparatus is that you would
let us know what this is, and you'll win a Dundee, the strong neck award.
I feel like maybe it's for like, you know, lumberjack games or something where you need to pull a log with your neck. I'm not sure. But I love that Dwight gravitates towards the strangest gym equipment.
Yeah. It's very... this whole little section of this episode makes me very uncomfortable.
It's uncomfortable because, all right, on one level, it's very funny. And if you want to, you know, dive down the upsetting level, there are a number of men that do that to women in gyms, and it's intimidating and scary and awful. And so there's like that level to it also. And I think that now watching the show with a lot of awareness of that and a lot of people speaking up about things like that, it does feel creepier than funny. Like, it starts bordering on the, this is making me a little uncomfortable, because we all know that now. And I think that this particular scene, it is indicative of when Steve Carell said that if The Office were to air for the first time now, a scene like that feels very, very different to this generation of watchers than it did 10 years ago.
Totally, totally agree. I had that same thought of, this would not be something that you would write or air today in this way.
Yeah, because you can't laugh at that, because that is a serious thing that happens to women, and they get intimidated out of just doing an everyday task, and that's super upsetting, and that's exactly what's happening here. But we're seeing it in this comedy way, where Dwight is doing this for investigative purposes, and he's already a beloved character, so it feels strange to see a confrontation like this and excuse it because we like the characters involved, when really we know that it was actually like a really, really wrong thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But let's get out of the gym, because Donna is furious, and Dwight ends up spilling everything to Donna and telling her why he was there.
And by the way, I told her not to, but she's coming over here and she's furious.
What? No, she didn't say that.
You're right. I was paraphrasing. What she actually said was, what is with him? He is crazy. I'm coming over there to talk to him. And this was after I have no other recourse but to tell her and gym security that you had sent me there to see if she was cheating.
His tactics were obviously skewed. He should have been quiet with a long lens like any other creep.
That's the real life advice here. That's what we're walking away with. Be creepy, but from far away.
Exactly. If you're hired to be creepy, don't get up in anyone's face. Do it, you know, stealthily from afar. But Donna is on her way over to the office to tell Michael that he is crazy and ask, like, basically, you know, WTF.
Michael, though, he's already spiraling before she shows up. He's eating comfort food, except there's no ice cream. And so he put together a dish that just looks like ice cream, of mayo and olives.
Wow, it's a little early for ice cream, don't you think?
It's never too early for ice cream, Jim. But we didn't have any ice cream, so this is mayonnaise and black olives.
Oh,
it's comfort food, all right? God.
And I challenge you, have you heard anything worse in terms of food?
Ooh, mayonnaise and olives, okay. It doesn't sound that bad, because mayonnaise is usually the base for most like party dips. And olives are also like a topping or a, you know, pickly element in party dips. So it doesn't sound that horrible. It doesn't sound that horrible. I would be more grossed out by like a chocolate element with a pickly element. That gets weird.
Mm. Yeah, you don't want a lot of sweets in your mayo.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
My grandmother always told me that.
That's good advice. Thanks, Granny. So it's not that bad, but he is eating a bowl of mayonnaise, which is a problem.
Yeah.
That's the more gross part to me.
Mm-hmm. So Jim and Pam come across this scene, and they try to talk to him and try to sort of pull him out of this funk that he's in. And, you know, Pam sits down and talks to him and says, hey, you know what? You have a tendency to torpedo your relationships. You know, you need to quit spiraling, you know, call off Dwight. But he starts naming his failed relationships and forgets about Helene, Pam's mom. And this is a great moment where the camera pans to Jim. He just like makes this face like, I cannot believe. Like, come on, Michael.
You're right. I ruined everything. And I've known some wonderful women. Holly, Carol, Jan.
Helene.
Helene?
My mother.
Oh.
My mother, Helene.
Oh, yeah. Yes, yes, yes. All of the greatest loves of my life.
At the same time, this whole scene also makes me a little sad because Michael is spiraling because, as he says later in the episode, he can't quite believe that he gets to be and spend time with this woman that he sees as way out of his league. And I feel like that the idea that she's cheating on him is just so easy to go to, you know, like it's such an easy connection for him to make because he is already like feeling like this relationship is too good to be true, that he's not worthy of it, that, you know, she's too good for him. And of course she would want somebody else while wanting him. So that's really sad to me.
Yeah. I think we get a view into how Michael sees himself in this, and it is sad. And it is something that earlier in the show, in the series, we wouldn't care so much about. But by this point, we've seen the good that is in Michael. And it does make it hard to watch. You know, it is hard to see this character, even though he is immature and all these things that he is. It's hard to see him in this place that he thinks that he doesn't deserve this. And so he's coming up with reasons that it can't possibly work out.
I mean, even though the terrible way that he ended up breaking up with Helene, I think that those episodes where we saw how romantic and thoughtful and caring he was with her really shows that like he can be an amazing boyfriend partner to somebody. And that I think that that's why Pam and Jim are also a little sympathetic here, because like they can see that, wow, you did all this stuff. You're very sweet and you're thoughtful and, you know, you're focused and committed when you are involved with somebody. And that's like a really nice thing. And I think without those episodes and without the glimpse into that relationship, we would totally not have the sympathy for Michael now. But because of all these building blocks that we've been seeing from all these other episodes, like we've built him up and we do see him as deserving of a good, healthy relationship.
At this point, Dwight shows back up. He's limping from his workout. Or maybe he got tased by gym security.
We'll never know.
We never know. He turns in his expenses. So he got a bunch of protein bars. Later, we see him drinking a protein shake out of a blender at his desk in the background. You know, he's really ripped.
Who eats 8 protein bars?
People who don't trust egg whites.
Okay.
There's also a throwback in here from Benihana Christmas, where we hear Michael moaning and we don't see him, and he's on the floor behind reception like he was after Carol broke up with him in the Christmas episode.
That's right. I was trying to think of what... I'm like, this looks so familiar. I was getting that sense of deja vu from that kind of reaction.
Maybe you'd be more comfortable in your own office.
No, I like the attention.
And so, yeah, so Donna shows up and they're talking in their office. She suggests they get out of town for a few days. And, you know, Michael's into that. And then we get a big clue that maybe there is something going on.
Yeah, so as she's in the office trying to calm things down with Michael, she pops over into the break room and everyone, or a bunch of people, Kelly, Pam, Jim, people are in the break room. And Donna's wearing these heart-shaped earrings. Kelly, whom I don't think it was an accident that she points out these earrings, mentions to Donna like, oh, I like your earrings. Where did you get them? Donna has a hard time answering, and she flounders terribly in the face of the all-knowing mall Kelly. Yeah. She knows every mall in any area, even when Donna tries to get out of it and say it was in a different city. Kelly also knows every mall in Philadelphia, which is a fantastic little trivia thing about Kelly.
Oh, hey, I love your earrings.
Thank you.
Did Michael get them for you?
No, I bought them myself.
Where?
Steamtown Mall.
Claire's? Zales? Ricky's? Earrings, earrings, earrings? Fancy Girl? Platinum Cat? Where?
You know, I actually got them in Philadelphia, in a mall down there.
Franklin Mills? King of Prussia? Springfield? Governor's Place?
Franklin Mills.
Pam points out that women don't buy themselves heart-shaped jewelry, that someone else had to have bought that for her, and it had to have been recently. And I really like the exchange between her and Jim, because Jim totally bought her a heart-shaped locket, and now he's questioning all of his choices because women don't actually like heart-shaped jewelry.
Wait, sorry, you like heart-shaped jewelry, though, right?
No, except for the pendant that you bought me, which I love.
It's really great.
Which it's so true, though. It's women do not buy themselves heart-shaped jewelry, generally. They don't like it unless someone gives it to them as a gift. I the gift element of it does make it better. So anyone out there listening who did give their significant other a heart-shaped piece of jewelry, they like it because it was meaningful from you. But they actually don't like it.
See? That's mixed messaging on your part.
It's not. There's different levels of liking.
Okay. But this, you know, makes Pam worried. So she goes on a little investigation. She's much better at it than Dwight is. So much better.
Because she actually uses the internet where people actually are. And you can find out real information about them.
And Dwight believes that the internet's a fad. So she finds some pictures of her with another man, and they're from recently, from within the bounds of her relationship with Michael. So she prints them out on a Sabre printer, which we're going to get to. We're going to get to the B plot, I promise.
Oh, I had no doubt in you. Don't worry.
And she goes into Michael's office very desperately trying to get him to either send Donna out or to join her to speak privately. Escalating to the point where, yes, I'm here to talk about my sex life with Jim, my husband, with you, Michael. You're the only person who can help.
I actually have something very important to talk to you about.
Well, it can
business
wait.
Related.
It can wait.
I lied. It's personal. It's about me and Jim. You're the only person I can talk to.
Jim is her husband.
And
they're having problems,
no,
and so she
no,
comes to
we're
me.
Not, we're not having problems, but it is personal, and I would love...
In bed!
Yes. Yes, I desperately want to speak with you about my sex life.
And it just doesn't raise Michael's attention whatsoever.
I need you to sign this. So bad.
Okay, weirdo.
She finally has to hand Michael the pictures in this, you know, folder and distract Donna with they were booking a vacation on Michael's computer. So Pam starts chatting with Donna about that to kind of distract her while Michael is looking over the photos. And Pam points out that he might want to note the date on those photos. And it comes to light that there is something else going on here.
Yeah. I love the way Pam plays it. You know, she's, the whole thing is brilliant to me. Pam tries to calm him down outside in the hallway using a picture of Cece.
You just have to go in there. You have to hear it from her.
I have to hear it from her.
You have to settle down first.
I need to have her tell me herself.
Okay.
Right?
Yes.
I need to have her say, I need to say, what the hell is that? What the hell is that?
Look at this. Look at this baby picture.
No, God. No, no. Oh, my God.
Hi, Michael.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
There's a lot of protection and friendship going on here between Pam and Michael. I feel like she's really looking out for him during this whole thing. Like, she was encouraging the relationship. I mean, this whole, like, all of this started with her even trying to set Michael up with another friend of hers, which she should have learned from trying to set up her landlord that one time, and it went horrible years and years ago. But now she tried to set Michael up with a friend. She saw his relationship with Donna begin. She supported him with the signals that Donna was giving when she came over to buy some printers. And now she was encouraging him that, you know, there wasn't anything suspicious going on, that he should have faith. And now she's also, now that she has learned that there is something going on, now she's trying to protect Michael. And so I like seeing their relationship build. We've seen Jim and Michael get closer through the whole management, double management fiasco. And now we're seeing the relationship between Pam and Michael build up through this tumultuous relationship with Donna.
It's nice. I really like it. And it's something that feels very organic in the course of the show. It doesn't feel like, oh, we need these characters to be closer, so we're going to force them. It's just like, yeah, they're reacting the way that they would based on who we know they are.
Yeah, and I think that it really helped that Pam had moved away from being Michael's secretary or, you know, assistant, really, when she was at reception. And then the whole Michael Scott Paper Company, they really did a wonderful job of organically, like you said, building these relationships together. And I'm really focusing and noticing that more this watch through than I ever have before. You know, it just kind of like nicely happened and like ushered me along. And now that I'm really, really looking at it and I'm noticing how each of these episodes is a tiny building block towards, you know, this ultimate goal of this closeness between all these characters. It's really wonderful to watch in that analytical way. But we should get to the confrontation where Michael decides to confront Donna about what the heck is going on.
Yeah. So this happens out in the parking lot, and Michael, I think he thinks he's being smoother than he is. He's trying to like trick her with days.
You know what? We should really do something fun this week.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah.
How about Thursday?
Thursday works. Yeah. What do you want to do?
I can't do a Thursday book club. How about Friday?
Oh, Friday doesn't work.
Oh, really? Because I was thinking we could go to this concert. Spice Girls are opening for Weird Al, front row. Be a great, great concert.
Shoot, I'm working.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I stop by.
Well, won't you be at the concert?
Nope, that's Tuesday.
Oh, well, I can make it on Tuesday.
He's trying to trap her, but I don't think he does a very good job of it.
No.
But he finally just comes out and says it.
You're cheating. You're cheating on me.
And she doesn't deny it. She says, how did you know? And his answer is, Pam told me. And the camera like swings up to the window and then cuts to the inside. And we've seen this a lot where people are watching things happen in the parking lot and then back away from the window. So, oh, we're not watching. So a couple of characters do that, but then Pam like hits the deck, just like dives to the floor, and
they all do. Like everyone in that room, it was Stanley, Jim, Dwight, and Pam were all watching through the window. It wasn't even everybody, and they all like Pam really hits the deck, but Stanley is like up against the wall. So is Jim. Dwight backs away. They all have like this extreme reaction. It's so funny. It's so funny because that's how you would feel if someone like looked up and you knew that. Oh, like, I think your first reaction is that like flight, like, just hide.
And we learned that Donna is cheating, but cheating with Michael, not on Michael.
I'm the mistress.
Dun, dun, dun. Twist, plot twist. Yeah, Michael's the other woman here. And it's I think that is shocking to him. He did not expect that, because this whole time, the whole spiral that Michael was going down, he was feeling bad about himself and in this relationship and his worth, because he was seeing that like someone who I was enjoying being with is not enjoying being with me or needs more than me and therefore is cheating on me with someone else. And it turns out, it's kind of opposite of that, is that like he now is the other person, the person that was chosen second because they were more interesting, essentially. So it leaves us there, like that plot line leaves us kind of hanging on that idea here, right? That Michael now has to reevaluate what is going on here. You know, it's still a betrayal, but now he's on a side that he never expected to be on.
I like that that's where they end it. I mean, this is the very, very end. We don't see anything with Michael and Donna after this. It's quite the cliffhanger.
But that's not the end of the episode. We have a whole B plot going on while all of this investigative work is happening in the office over the mystery of Donna. And Andy gets a call in the beginning of the episode about a printer that has caught fire from one of his clients. Was doing a big printing job. The printer caught fire. And this freaks Andy out a little bit. He feels very concerned about it.
Hey, Stanley, one of my clients just called and said that their Saber printer started smoking and caught on fire.
My doctor told me to cut out hot dogs. We all got problems.
Andy wants to know more about this and like what he can do and what's happening. And this is probably a big deal to only have his concerns met with a little bit of like under the rug sweeping. I don't know. Is this gaslighting here?
Yeah.
Andy getting a little bit gaslit from Gabe?
I think so. You know, we don't know if Gabe actually does anything about it. I think that he probably does, but he's not. Andy doesn't feel listened to, right? And Andy responds the way that he should, right? Like, yeah, he goes to the person that he should go to, and he voices his concern, and whatever happens above him, while a little unclear, clearly isn't the appropriate response from the company.
I talked to corporate. Turns out there have been 12 reports of faulty printers out of 400,000. We've investigated every time it's been user error. They blocked the vents or something. I don't know. That's why we have the fine print. Thank you for bringing this to our attention. So I'd like to reward you for that. That's good for $5 at Dunkin' Donuts. Any Dunkin' Donuts.
But it gives Daryl this opportunity to screw with Andy. So apparently in the past, at some point, like 2 years ago, Andy messed up an order and Daryl got blamed. And so Daryl has been holding on to this for 2 years, looking for an opportunity to get back at Andy. And he sees this printer thing as an opportunity to prank Andy back and to level the playing field. And we learn, because Daryl tells the camera, he doesn't have a plan. He's just going to roll with it. At one point, Andy makes a suggestion, and Daryl turns to the camera, which is over his shoulder. He's like, ah, there it is. That's what we're going to do. And Andy's like, what, you know, what are you talking about? It's Daryl plays it very funny to me, that he knows he's playing on the meta level of also being filmed. It's kind of a fun interaction with the camera crew, I think.
I don't have a plan, exactly. More of a loose structure. Gives me freedom to improvise. It's like jazz. Andy, don't mess with me. I'll figure something out.
Yeah, Daryl is having a little bit of fun this episode, stoking the fire that Andy is freaking out over this literal fire in this printer. And so we're seeing the two sides that Andy is experiencing. We're seeing Gabe kind of like go to corporate and then come back to Andy with basically like some mundane facts and a gift card to like quiet him down. And like you said, we're not completely sure that Gabe is aware of how serious this is, or if Gabe is just a middleman, just kind of passing along some information, which is how I feel it probably is. And then we have Daryl, who is encouraging Andy, but encouraging him in a way of intentionally making him freak out more for, you know, prank benefits. And it eventually escalates that Daryl and Andy are down in Cafe Disco.
Yes.
I love that they reuse that weird closet room down there to film this test of one of the printers. And so Andy has set up like a big printing job, and Daryl is manning the camera and has Andy like introduce himself.
We're printing on 24-pound premium stock paper, approximately 300 sheets in so far, no signs of distress.
You haven't even introduced yourself.
Right. My name is Andrew Baines Bernard, and if you're watching this, it's because I've turned state's witness, because I'm in danger, because I know too much.
You should talk in a higher voice, because the camera makes you sound weird.
Higher? Okay. Recently, certain events have come to my attention.
Higher.
That make it higher? Okay. Mm-hmm. I have come to the conclusion that the Saber
situation. Maybe overlooking certain safety regulations.
Daryl thinks it's like this big joke. He loves encouraging Andy. He loves like seeing him freak out and everything. And then the printer catches fire.
At the teacher! It's smoking.
The printer catches fire while it is printing. And at that point, Daryl is so shocked, and Andy is like, he's just elated about it. He's not happy that the printers catch fire. He's happy he's right.
Yes. And he like grabs Daryl. He's like, yeah, Daryl's been my co-conspirator the whole time. We've been in it together. And the shock and dismay on Daryl's face is so good. It is so good. And he tells the cameras, like, I'm done pranking. I'm going to behave. I'm going to go to church. I'm going to do one nice thing a day. I'm sorry. I screwed with the universe. It's really good. And they have stumbled onto something big, it feels like.
Yeah, they definitely have. This is a big revelation, and it's something that I think they're going to go forward and deal with. Before we get to the complete end, I have a little bit of a Creed closet moment. Like, creak that open. That's my sound effect for Creed closet. You like that?
Do it like Cookie Monster.
Cookie Monster creaking a door open? This is getting... Oh, man.
Still better than my normal Cookie Monster.
I'll take that compliment. So Creed gets involved a little bit in Daryl's prank during the instigation of Andy. And Daryl asks Creed to get in on this because Creed is head of quality control. And so as Creed walks by, he was told to do like kind of the slicing the neck motion as he's walking past Andy. That's fine. Like, that's all, that seems normal in prank. You know, you want to get some other people involved so it seems legit. But the Creedy closet moment here is that Creed calls Daryl Darnell during the entire talking head interview, which is so good.
So there I am, minding my own business, and Darnell offers me $3. All I gotta do is walk by Andy and go like this. Darnell's a chump. I would have done it for anything. I've done a lot more for a lot less.
He didn't need $3 to do that.
But yeah, we have two cover-ups, as the title indicates. We have the cover-up of Donna's relationship that she has been hiding, and the cover-up of these, you know, flammable printers.
What a time.
What a time to be alive.
So who had the biggest bombshell, Michael or Andy / Daryl?
I'm thinking Michael.
I think so, too.
So we will be back next week talking about the episode The Chump. And until then, try not to have your printer catch on fire.
I will. I'll film it if it does.
Oh, please do.
Michael,
this is so disgusting.
Stop eating it.